Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Rocket Nation, welcome to another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We are back once again. Christian Adams here with you, a.k.a. Rocket, and my special co-host, actress and editor Lisa Morris. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Well, like last week, tonight is a special, very, very special night in sports. March Madness is officially kicking off. Tournaments are now underway and getting ready to begin any moment. And I hope everyone got their brackets filled out, except myself. You know, I don't count because, you know, I didn't have it in me to fill one out this year, and it's funny because it used to be such a tradition. Last year, I didn't fill one out because the whole Syracuse with their star player, I think, was suspended. That kind of screwed up everybody's brackets, including my own that I attempted. So I decided to kind of refrain from that this year again because I'm not exactly so sure what's going to happen. I don't even know who's going to make it to the Final Four. I don't know who's going to win it all. It just seems like we always have that one team that's regarded as a Cinderella story that just comes out of nowhere and upsets some people or, you know, at least get to the Elite Eight. So I'm anxious to see how this is all going to go down, and I'm looking forward to just witnessing who has it in them. I mean, this is where heart, determination, and desire really comes into play, and not just talent. You got to find out a way to just, you know, rise above expectations and just make the best of it because, you know, March Madness is what defines a college player's career, especially if you're a senior who's on the verge of getting ready to enter the NBA draft, and this is it. This is it. This is what's going to determine a lot of futures for these young men, and I'm excited. I'm excited. I can't wait. We also got a lot to talk about with the NFL free agency. What's funny was after our last broadcast, that's when more moves were being made, and some moves may upset some people. Some moves may make some people happy. I was happy with a lot of the moves that have been made lately, and we're going to get to that. Plus, we got some NBA games that are in session tonight, some NHL games, and we are 2 weeks away from the MLB season, 2 weeks. 13
Yay.
Days to be exact. We are 2 weeks away, and, you know, despite it being a very long season, a lot of people, including myself, we are all anxious to, you know, see what our teams are going to do. And if you're a devoted fan, you know, and if you're a team like the Tigers, a team like the Mariners, the Red Sox, the Braves, you know, you are really excited for what's going to happen. And I'm excited, very excited.
Yeah, me too.
Now, as usual, I like to start off this show by wishing some happy birthdays to some athletes whose birthdays are today. I would like to wish a happy 34th birthday to Hato Turkoglu, who still in the NBA to this day, still playing. He got his big break with the Sacramento Kings. He was actually drafted in 2000. He was the 16th pick overall. He made his mark right away. His sophomore season, he was the NBA. He was actually considered to be the NBA Sixth Man of the Year. He played on a really good Kings team that had Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, Peja Stojakovic, Mike Bibby, Doug Christie. That team that came up short in the 2002 postseason against the Lakers in that Game 7 where a lot of people felt like it was very controversial. It was a good team during that era. Unfortunately, they broke up. And he moved on to the San Antonio Spurs in 2003. He never got a chance to play. He never got a chance to win a championship just yet. He played on one championship team. Actually, no, he didn't. On 2009, when he was with Orlando that year, they traded him in the middle of the season. He went to Toronto, and the funny thing was, to this day, he is still regarded as one of the best three-point shooters right now, and he's done some nice, impressive things. You know, he's a 2008, he was the NBA Most Improved Player, in 2001, the All-Rookie Second Team. So he's done some things, and this guy continues to be one of the best premier shooters, despite the Magic being such a bad team this year. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him, and he's a good player to watch, especially if you want to be a good shooter. He's a good player to watch, and he's the type of player that, in a pick-and-roll scheme, leaves him open for a three-pointer, he's going to drill you most of the time. And he's also capable of diving to the basket, creating his own shot. He can do a little bit of those things, and he's just very, very talented. He's not one of those one-dimensional players. He can do a little bit of everything. So happy birthday to him. Happy birthday to him, definitely. Happy 37th birthday to Andre Miller, another longtime NBA star. He was drafted in 1991. He was the 8th pick overall. He was selected by Cleveland. He bounced around a few teams. He's played for the Cavs, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Sixers, the Blazers, and now he's back with the Nuggets. He's been back with them since 2011. He was the NBA All-Rookie first team in 2000. He led the league in assists in 2002, and he's played on some really good playoff teams. He's played on some playoff teams with Denver, Philadelphia. He's been a very good exceptional passer. That's the one thing about his game that makes him so good. He's a good passer. He knows how to find guys in the open lane or behind the arc. He can do a little bit of everything. I mean, he didn't lead the league in assists once for nothing. The guy can pass, he can score, he can rebound, and he can play a little bit of good defense as well. So in 2009, in the postseason with Philadelphia, he led the team with 21.2 points per game, averaged 43 minutes. So the guy can play. He's got so much energy. He can do it all. He can do it all. He's
Why do you think he's bounced around so much, though?
He's one of those guys that I was talking about this a couple weeks ago. I was watching the game between the Nuggets and the Clippers, and I was saying how Ty Lawson is probably the best point guard that nobody talks about. He doesn't get a lot of respect right now. And to me, Andre Miller, despite bouncing around a lot of teams, he doesn't get a lot of respect either. And keep in mind, Chauncey Billups bounced around a lot of teams, you know, until finally when he came to Detroit. He really started getting more respect, and he became an all-star eventually. Sometimes players end up on the wrong side of a package, and that package is when you get dealt or when you are a free agent and nobody attempts to re-sign you, nobody really wants you in their future plans. Unfortunately, that sort of thing happens. I mean, he played on some bad teams, by the way. I mean, those Cleveland teams that he played with, they never really did anything. You know, those Clippers teams he played with, they never really did anything. It wasn't until he went to Denver, and then they drafted Carmelo Anthony, and they started bringing in some other guys, you know, especially when they changed their uniforms to the white, the powder blue, and the yellow. They really started to become a playoff team, and they've been in the playoffs every year. So he's one of those guys that just doesn't get that much respect. And like I was talking about with Turku, if you want to learn how to shoot, well, in this case with Andre Miller, if you want to learn how to be a good passer, he's a guy that you want to watch. He's a guy that you want to take notes from. He's a guy that you want to, collect some information from as far as learning how to pass and still be a quality shooter and play good defense and be a good rebounder despite being undersized. And, you know, he was one of those guys that can do that. But, unfortunately, he's just on the wrong side of the tracks. And, you know, he is still one of the best passers in the game. And, you know, if I ever need, like, a team or a guy to run an offense, you know, he's one of the guys I'm going to pick by far, definitely. Mm. So, nonetheless, happy birthday to him and absolutely many, many more happy returns. Happy 45th birthday to Tyrone Hill, who is another former NBA player, played the power forward position. He was a very good rebounder, this is also another guy who's bounced around a handful of teams. He was drafted in 1990 by the Golden State Warriors. He was the 11th pick overall. Then he went on to play for Cleveland, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Cleveland again, Philadelphia again. And then in 2003, he finished his career with Miami. He was an NBA All-Star in 1995. He's averaged 9.4 career points per game, 8.6 career rebounds, and 0.8 assists per game. He was one of those guys that he had a good percentage shooting, but then again, he never shot the ball a lot. But despite shooting 52%, you know, 50.2%, I'm sorry, his career free throw percentage is 63%. But what do you expect from most big guys who can't make free throws and don't shoot free throws very well? And wow. he's just another one of those guys. But he was a good rebounder and came out of University of Xavier. He was a good scorer. He averaged 20.2 points and 12.6 rebounds per game while shooting nearly 60%. But he didn't play on a lot of playoff teams, unfortunately. He didn't play on a lot of championship teams, and he did play on the 2001 Sixers team that went to the NBA Finals despite losing to the Lakers. He was still a very good exceptional rebounder. He could do some things like play good defense, just the type of guy that's going to give you some energy, whether he was starting or coming off the bench. He was going to play, and he was going to rebound the ball very well. And despite not having a lot of success, he was a very good rebounder. And, you know, he was one of those guys, again, like I was talking with the other two guys, if you want to learn how to be a good rebounder, he's one of those guys you want to watch. So happy birthday to him, and many happy returns. And, you know, he had a solid career. I'm not going to say it was a great career, but he had a solid career, definitely.
Yeah, it's not like he was a scrappy guy. I do remember Tyrone Hill.
He was. He was always one of the guys that was like the butt of people's, you know, jokes, opposing fans, you know. People used to call him ugly and things like that.
Oh.
And, you know, it was messed up. It was messed up. But, you know, players always get hated on. You know, most players always get hated on and everything. But, you know, he was still a solid player, and he could do a little bit. He could do a little bit of scoring, but do a little bit of rebounding and defense, you know, and that sort of thing. So, you know, some of the teams he played on were bad, but, you know, he still had a decent career, a definitely decent career. So happy birthday to him, and many, many happy returns. Happy 27th birthday to Ahmad Bradshaw, who is now and still an NFL free agent. He was cut by the Giants recently, but still, he played on two Super Bowl teams with the Giants. He's played his entire career with the Giants so far. Two-time Super Bowl champion. He was drafted in 2007. He was actually a seventh-round pick, 250th pick overall. He actually came out of the University of Marshall. And Marshall, they've been one of those underlooked schools, but still managed to send some good quality players to the NFL. Guys like Randy Moss and Byron Leftwich, you know, those guys who came out of the school. He's definitely a good power runner. And I want to say to all the teams out there that's looking for a running back free agent, get in contact with him. Get in contact with him because he's good. He can run up the middle. He's also good at getting to the outside. He's got a certain good burst of speed. He can break tackles. He can do those little things that you ask a running back to do. He's very big. He's very powerful. I mean, the guy, he's a little undersized, but he weighs 214 pounds. And for a running back, that's pretty good. So the guy can play. And anyone who's looking for a running back out there, I say please contact this guy. Contact this guy. Now, I will say he may not be the type of guy that's going to get you 100 yards every game, but he's still going to do those little things. He'll block. He'll catch passes out of the backfield. He'll kind of spread out in the option passing formation where he'll line up as a wide receiver and kind of force defenders to guard him, which sets up opportunities for wide receivers and tight ends. So he played on some good Giants teams, and like I say, he's a free agent, and I'd say get in contact with this guy as soon as possible if you're a team that's looking for a player, you know, a running back, a good, solid running back, because there's not a lot of free agent running backs available anymore now, so and there's not going to be a lot as far as the upcoming NFL draft is concerned, so call him. He's still young. He's in the prime of his career. He can still play. So get in contact with the guy. But happy 27th birthday to him, and many, many happy returns.
Do you think if the Lions hadn't picked up Reggie Bush, they would have went after this guy?
He wasn't one of those guys that was looked at for him, because originally they were going to go after Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson was going to be the second
option.
Right. Ahmad Bradshaw, there were rumors that he was going to go to San Francisco, or he's going to sign with Cleveland, or or Atlanta, they expressed interest with him, but they took Steven Jackson, so they moved on from that situation. I think at this rate, any team that does take him, they're going to get someone that could provide, you know, maybe a 1-2 punch with any of the other running backs they had. When the Giants had Brandon Jacobs, they had two power runners. So they kind of had like a Thunder and Thunder, you know, compared to the Thunder and Lightning, they used to have a Ron Dane and Tiki Barber. But in this case, any team that does take him, and I think that it's a possibility that a team like the Oakland Raiders should be interested in him. I think the San Diego Chargers should take a look at him. I think maybe even Cleveland should take a look at him as well, because, you know, it's always nice to have a 1-2 running back tandem in the league.
Right.
You don't always want to have that one guy that's going to get the bulk of carries, because running backs bruise much more now than they did back in the early days. And one thing
right.
I know is that a lot of these running backs have, you know, not lasted very long because they were always getting a lot of carries. Larry Johnson was one of those guys. When he played in Kansas City, he played behind Priest Holmes, he played behind Derek Blaylock, and then when he finally got his turn to start, he was the first, second, and third option at running back. And Herm Edwards used to use him a lot as far as spread options. He would line up as a wide receiver. He would catch passes out of the backfield. He was the guy on that Chiefs team that got 95% of the touches as far as running backs are concerned. And eventually, he was taking so much physical punishment that his career started to slowly die down. And then eventually, the Chiefs gave up on him, and they decided to go in a different direction. Then he signed a contract with the Washington Redskins, and it was funny because at the time, the Redskins had – they were bringing in a bunch of other bruising running backs, and they already had one of their own in Clinton Portis. And they brought in Sean Alexander, who was already at the end of his career, you know, another guy that was taking a lot of bumps and bruises. You know,
right. His career ended quickly, didn't it?
And it was sad because this guy was well on his way to being one of the best backs in NFL history. In 2005, he broke a record for most rushing touchdowns in the season. And they went to the Super Bowl that year. He's been a Pro Bowler.
Right.
He was just a good runner, a very good runner. Could run on the inside, could run on the outside. And, of course, he had guys like Steve Hutchinson and Walter Jones to block for him. He had a very solid quarterback in Matt Hasselbeck. And he played with some solid receivers in Daryl Jackson and Bobby Engram. And then later on, Deion Branch, when they acquired him in the trade from New England. But one thing I've noticed is that some running backs just don't last long when they get the bulk of the carries. The Panthers, I remember them being a team that always had a two running back tandem, whether it was Deshaun Foster, D'Angelo Williams, just guys like them, Jonathan Stewart. They always managed to have a two running back tandem, and you know that's something that most teams definitely want to consider more of, because if you got the guy who's going to be the starter, you want to have another quality guy behind him that can also do some things as well. So. Nonetheless, happy birthday to Ahmad Bradshaw, and I hope you find a team real soon. And, you know, good luck to you the rest of the way as far as your career is concerned. Happy 33rd birthday to Corn Robinson, who is a former NFL player, and this guy was a complete head case. Well, first of all, he was drafted in 2001 by the Seahawks. He was the 9th pick overall. This guy was supposed to be, you know, one of the best upcoming receivers. He was an All-Pro in 2005. He went to the Pro Bowl that year with Minnesota. But this guy was released for repeatedly violating the NFL substance abuse policy. And when you have a coach like Mike Holmgren who gives up on you, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big
problem.
I remember Mike Holmgren was, you know, reduced to tears, you know, when they eventually cut him, because he always prayed for him, but he was one of those guys that gave up on him because of off-the-field issues, kind of like Dick Vermeil when he gave up on Lawrence Phillips because of his off-the-field issues. And Lawrence Phillips
right.
is still in jail, and he's going to be in jail for a long time.
Wow.
But when you got coaches like that, nice guys, you know, guys that will take the time to coach you in whatever position you're playing to make sure you are better, guys who are behind you, look out for you and will take care of you, bring you into their organization, and eventually when they give up on you, that says something about you as the player. And
mm-hmm.
it's funny because I remember he had a game against the Lions in 2005 at Ford Field. he absolutely torched them that day. And that was the game where a fan got ejected because he held up a Fire Millen sign. And this would be the first of many to come. And it was a game that the Vikings won, and it was embarrassing, very embarrassing. And it showed that Corin Robinson could play. I mean, the guy could play. You know, he's a very talented wideout. He was kind of big. He was 6'1", 205 pounds, which is big for a receiver. He could do some things. He's got 294 career receptions for 4,244 yards and 16 career touchdowns. But, you know, he bounced around some teams. After Minnesota, he went to Green Bay for a couple years in desperation because the Packers, apparently they needed another wideout because Javon Walker had moved on already and they didn't have that number one option. He went back to Seattle in 2008, you know, his second stint, but things didn't work out. The Seattle team at that time, their playoff run was over because they didn't make the postseason that year. And then he went over to the UFL, the United Football League, played with a couple teams over there. But since 2009, he's been out of the NFL. He's been to jail so many times. He's been arrested so many times. I mean, this guy was an alcoholic. This guy was just a bad head case off the field. I mean, he just was the type of guy that could never really get his life together. And who knows what he's doing now? To be honest with you, who knows? Either way you look at it, he was a talented receiver. You know, I wish him the best. Nonetheless, the guy was a solid wideout when he played. He was very, very good. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him, and I hope the rest of his life is better, and I hope things are good for him and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Happy 43rd birthday to Rick Meyer, former quarterback, also another guy that bounced around a ton of teams. I was watching, you know, the NFL Network, they have the show called The Top 10. They had a segment on it called The Top 10 Draft Busts of All Time. Rick Meyer was on that list. The crazy thing about it was Bill Walsh said that Rick Meyer was going to be the next Joe Montana. He was drafted in 1993. He was the second pick overall. Now, what many people don't remember is that when the draft happened, the Patriots, who had the number one overall pick in 93, they had a choice between Rick Meyer and Drew Bledsoe. They decided to take Drew Bledsoe, and it turned out to be a good move because Drew Bledsoe took the Patriots to the Super Bowl, and he was on the team when he went to the Super Bowl when Tom Brady ended up becoming the starter. The crazy thing was, one thing about Rick Meyer was he had one of the best rookie seasons ever. In fact, to this day, his rookie year was his best year. He threw for over 2,800 yards. He threw 12 touchdowns. You know, he completed the most passes that year for his career, 274. But since then, he just went on a downside because he was the type of guy that couldn't throw to his left. And if you're going to run, if you're going to be a good, solid quarterback, you can't be one-dimensional. You can't just throw to one side of the field. You know, some quarterbacks, when they would go up against the Cowboys, you know, when they would go up against Deion Sanders, of course, they wouldn't throw to that side of the field. But it wasn't because they couldn't. It's because, you know, you didn't want to throw to Deion. You know, that was pretty much the whole outlook on it. But Rick Meyer could not throw to the left side of the field, and that was just unfortunate. So in 1997, he was traded to the Chicago Bears, and what was crazy was the Bears gave up a first-round draft pick at the time. And this is when the guy was already labeled as a potential bust. So that was a big mistake that the Bears had made. He only spent one season with them and only threw for 420 yards, no touchdowns, and just six interceptions. And that 97 Bears team was absolutely horrible. They were trying to find a quarterback that year, and they did not have one. So, unfortunately, he bounced around a few more teams, played with the Packers. Well, he was a part of the practice squad, so he never really suited up for them. The Lions in 2004, same scenario. Between that, he was with the Jets, the 49ers, and the Raiders. He did play on a Super Bowl team with the Raiders, but, of course, he was a backup to Rich Gannon. And then that 04 stint with Detroit was his last outing in the NFL, and he has not been in the league since. He's got 50 career touchdowns and 76 career interceptions, and it's just unfortunate because, you know, he was a guy that he was a solid thrower, but he was a guy that was never really going to get you over the hump, and it was just unfortunate. It was just unfortunate. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him. He was a good guy. He wasn't the type of guy that was a bad dude or anything. I mean, he wanted to learn how to play, and he just struggled to throw to the left side of the field, unfortunately. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him, and many, many happy returns. And finally, happy 55th birthday to Andy Reid, the head coach now of the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, what's not to know about the guy? What's not to know about him? You know, he got his start in 1982 as a graduate assistant in Brigham Young University. In 1983, he became an offensive line coach at San Francisco University. In 86, he was the same position coach at Northern University. And then from 87 to 88, same thing at University of Texas at El Paso. From 89 to 91, University of Missouri, same position. 1994, he was the offensive assistant for the Green Bay Packers. And then in 95 and 96, offensive line coach again. And then 97, he was the quarterback's coach and the assistant head coach, the top assistant head coach. And then 1999 is when he finally got his big opportunity to be the head coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. And let's be honest, how many fans in Philadelphia who are, you know, the fans in Philadelphia, say what you want about them. They're crazy. They're wacky. But they just want to see a winner. And sometimes Reid did not provide that. He didn't make the playoffs every year. And I'll be honest with you, his first year, 99, that was a disastrous year. That was the year they drafted Donovan McNabb, and he had a terrible rookie campaign. But then the following year, when the Cowboys' era came to an end, where Troy Aikman was at the end of his career, Emmitt Smith was at the end of his career, and Michael Irvin was already long gone, who was injured in a game against Philadelphia, by the way, ironically, at the old Veterans Stadium. They turned the corner in 2000, going 11-5, but losing to division rival Giants in the NFC divisional game. They were a team that they went to three straight NFC championship games, and they lost all three of them. Actually, the funny thing was, when they lost to Tampa Bay in 2002, they had already beaten the Bucs 2 years in a row in the postseason. So a lot of people thought that they were going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what they say, third time's a charm, and Tampa Bay was the one that held the Super Bowl crown. Then the following year, they lost to Carolina in the NFC Championship game. And then finally in 2004, they traded for Terrell Owens. They went all the way to the Super Bowl, but they came up short to the Patriots. And then that's when things really started to kind of go downhill a little bit.
Right.
Not make the playoffs the next year. Terrell Owens was cut. And then, unfortunately, they started making some changes. And 2006, they went back to the playoffs, you know, with Jeff Garcia as the starting quarterback when McNabb was hurt. They lost to the Saints in the NFC divisional game. And then 07, they were 8-8, did not make the postseason. Then in 2008, they lost in the NFC championship game again. This time to the Arizona Cardinals, which a lot of people didn't really see that coming. And then the following year, they lost to the Cowboys in the NFC wild card game. And then 2010, the last time they were in the postseason, they lost to the Green Bay Packers in the NFC wild card game. And after that was when fans really started to want Andy Reid gone. And then that offseason, that following offseason, they started bringing in a wide number of players, the 90 Asamaga, Colin Jenkins, Vince Young, who made that stupid comment about the dream team or whatever. And they have not been a dream team since, that's for sure. And then last year they came out for 4-12 season, and we all pretty much knew it was over. It was definitely over. And now he's with the Kansas City Chiefs. He signed a 5-year contract to become the head coach. And it's sad because that same day they fired their general manager, Scott Pioli. And Scott Pioli has been regarded as arguably the best general manager in the NFL up to this point. The contract for Reid gives him control over all football operations. And he's one of only three current head coaches who have that much power. The other being obviously Bill Belichick and Mike Shanahan. I'm not sure if the Kansas City Chiefs should have done that or not.
These two coaches, though, Belichick and Shanahan, both have won
Super Bowls. Yeah,
Super Bowls, mm-hmm. And Andy Reid hasn't. And because really, he hasn't proven himself, I think.
When you look at the Eagles' track record from the time that Reid took the job over in '99, it was kind of like a situation where some of the teams that they lost to,
mm-hmm.
That team was better. Like when they went to the playoffs in 2000, they lost to the Giants. The Giants had the home field advantage, and the Giants had beaten the Eagles twice that year. So, to me,
mm-hmm.
I felt like they were not going to get it done. Then the following year, they lost to the high-power Rams, you know, the greatest show on turf. They lost to them on the road. But let's be honest, during that era, you were not going to beat the Rams on the road in the playoff game. It just wasn't going to happen. I think the loss to Tampa Bay was a shocker because a lot of people thought that they were really, really going to eventually turn a corner and do it again because they had beaten the Buccaneers twice in the previous two postseasons, and both of those games weren't close, 21-3 and 34-9. And the first game was a wild card game. The second game was a divisional game, I believe. It just seemed like they were going to do it, and they didn't. They just couldn't get it done. And the sad part is the Buccaneers ended up winning the Super Bowl. And a lot of people thought that could have been the Eagles had they gotten there. And then the following year, losing to Carolina was another big shocker to a lot of people. Not to me, because the Panthers had a good running game, they had a good defense, and they were just getting to McNabb that whole game. I remember a defensive back named Ricky Manning. A lot of people, because the Colts had lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game that day. And a lot of people, including myself, were joking, well, there was a guy named Manning who had a good game that day, and it was not Peyton. it was Ricky Manning, who he had three interceptions. He had three interceptions. They picked off McNabb three times. I think they forced a fumble. That defense was really getting to him because the Panthers won the game 14-3. And then when they got to the Super Bowl, they lost to the Patriots. And then the following year, the Eagles get to the Super Bowl. They lose to the Patriots, and a lot of people's questioning Donovan McNabb's leadership as a quarterback in a big game. And you know, the whole
mm-hmm.
feud with Terrell Owens what sent the Eagles into a tailspin. And I also think that they had a chance. I really thought they were going to beat Arizona in 08. I really thought they were going to do it. And when they didn't, that's when a lot of people thought that, okay, it's time for a coaching change. But the organization wouldn't do it. They had way too much faith in Andy Reid, and unfortunately it didn't really work out. So in this particular case, these past two seasons will probably be most disappointing seasons in franchise history, including those three NFC Championship game losses, because, for one, they didn't qualify for the playoffs. So that tells you something right there. And, unfortunately, all the big moves that they made, that it just goes to tell you, just because you make a lot of moves in free agency or in trades doesn't necessarily mean that player is going to fit the system. And you saw how the 90 Asamaga struggled because
right.
when he played in Oakland he played in a different coverage scheme, which allowed him to get the better of the wide receiver the majority of the time. Playing in the Eagles' defensive scheme where they love to blitz, meaning
mm-hmm.
You really got to hold your man down, he struggled. He struggled. And now he's also a free agent because he was cut, and the Eagles don't plan to bring him back. So they're definitely going in a different direction. They're definitely going
well,
in a different direction.
Let me ask you this this key question then. Do you think the Lions should bring Asamoah here to the Lions?
It would be nice. It would be nice because the set that Detroit runs is much different than the set that Philadelphia runs. Detroit doesn't run
mm-hmm.
a lot of blitz packages. They basically run a scheme where the defensive line, they run they rush with four and they drop back in coverage. So that frees up the linebackers to either pass rush, to go after the running backs, or to help defend the wide receivers in deep coverage. If he wants to come here, he can. If they offer him a contract, I don't know if they reached out to him or not, because Dan Grimes from Atlanta, he's also a free agent. And as a Lions fan, of course, I like to see them offer him a contract as well. Asamaga's going to get offers from a lot of teams right now. I don't know if anybody's really made a serious attempt to sign him, but, you know, the Lions, they brought back Chris Houston for another 5 years. The only cornerback they've really, really lost was Drayton Florence, but he can be replaced. You know, I didn't like him at all. Of course, they brought back Louis Delmas to help out the safety position, but their cornerback depth still needs help by far. And I think they should go cornerback with the first pick in the draft, either corner or defensive end, because there's still some defensive backs available. Ed Reed's available. They can offer him a contract if they want. So it just depends. But I would love to see him end up in a uniform. But you got to know, is he going to fit the system? Because we saw him struggle in Philadelphia. So that remains to be seen. But I think he would be a major addition. Absolutely. I would take him if he's interested in coming here to play and if he wants to help out. Why not? You know, there's rumors that he might go back to Oakland. You know, who knows? But he's still open on the free agent market out there. And I say any team that has a chance to go after him, go after him. Definitely. Definitely. But nonetheless, happy birthday to Andy Reid. Good luck in your new stint in Kansas City. Because you're going to have a mountain to climb, because Denver is going to be the cream of the crop in the AFC West, period.
Definitely.
And they just uploaded. And we're going to talk about that coming up. We're about to take a quick break. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We will be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We are still here, still having a great time, and it's one of those special nights again. March Madness is kicking off, and a lot of people are excited about that, including me. I can't wait to see who's going to come out on top and end up cutting down the net when it's all said and done. We got some NBA games that are happening tonight. We got one already in progress. Orlando is losing in Indiana to the Pacers 30-21. That game's in the second quarter. Portland and Milwaukee is getting ready to tip off in about 15 minutes. So will Denver and Oklahoma City. That's definitely the matchup of the night. And that could be a playoff matchup too, by the way. And later tonight, the Clippers and Sacramento will take the court at 10 p.m. If you have NBA TV, you can catch out. You can catch some of these games. Highlights will continue to be uploaded on that show. Looking at the situation and the NBA standings, real quickly, because I've been checking out the whole thing a lot lately. Despite Kobe Bryant's ankle injury, the Lakers are still holding down the number 8 spot. That ought to make a lot of fans happy. I'm happy. they're holding down the 8th spot. They're a game over Utah, and they're 1 game behind Houston. They're 3 games behind Golden State for the 6th spot, so that's still up for grabs as well. The San Antonio Spurs are still holding down the number 1 spot, but barely. They're only a game over OKC. Miami has now the best record in the league. I wasn't going to talk about them, but I will say, you know, congrats to them on their streak. You know, that was a good game last night between the Heat and Celtics. You know, it was a good game. They just Jeff Green, to me, just went haywire. I mean, 43 points. He shot 14 of 21 from the field. He played good. And also had 4 block shots, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he played good. But, you know, LeBron James had the game-winning shot, and that's pretty much what it came down to. The Celtics had a chance to either tie it or go for a game-winner. Paul Pierce came up way short on a 3-point attempt, and then the Heat ended up going away. Now, they were actually down by 17 at one point in this game, so that makes a lot of people disappointed. And the loss ends the Celtics' 11-game home winning streak. Now, of course, Kevin Garnett did not play last night. They decided to rest him for the game. I think it was amazing how the Celtics were able to compete without Garnett, without Rondo, with Pierce, who struggled, only scored 17 points. This is something that we're going to have to really, really pay attention to, because we could see the Heat and Celtics face off against each other in the postseason. It could definitely happen. Now, in the Eastern Conference, suppose that the Celtics slip off and fall to the 8th spot. That would put them in a potential first-round matchup with the Heat. Now, they're only 2.5 games over Milwaukee for that spot, for the 7th spot. They're currently tied with Chicago for 6th place. The Bulls currently own the tiebreaker. Indiana right now, they just surpassed New York for the number 2 spot. The Knicks, who won in Utah last night, they needed to, because the Brooklyn Nets just absolutely pounded the Pistons. I couldn't even watch that whole game. It was just that bad.
You know, I agree. I felt the same way.
But you know what? When you're a team that's trying to compete for a playoff spot, and they're motivated because they're only a game behind the Knicks in the Atlantic Division, so they need to continue to keep winning. They're only a game back, and Atlanta, they're still in there in the 5th spot. Now you look at the Western Conference, you got San Antonio, you got OKC, who just clinched their divisions, by the way. They clinched their playoff spots, I'm sorry. The Clippers, they're holding down the Pacific Division. They're only 8 games over Golden State. Then you got Memphis and Denver, who are both tied for the 4th spot. Those two teams could most likely end up facing each other. It just depends on who's going to be 4 and who's going to be 5, because I don't think Golden State is going to catch either team for those spots. So they're going to have to concentrate on holding down the 6th spot, which could put them a potential first-round matchup with the Clippers. And I think a lot of people will really enjoy that matchup because of both offenses, how the Clippers run their offense, how the Warriors run their offense. It would be awesome. And then, of course, you know, Houston, they're holding down the 7th spot, but barely. And let's say Houston does fall into the 7th spot and hang on to it at the start of the postseason. That will put them in a potential first-round matchup with OKC, meaning James Harden against his former team. And that,
right.
very, very interesting to watch because Houston can score, by the way, folks. They can score. In fact, they are the top offense in the NBA right now, averaging 106.7 points per game. They can score. We know that. To me, that would be an outstanding matchup. I will definitely be checking out that matchup. That might be the most entertaining matchup in the first round because OKC can score as well. In fact, these two teams are the top scoring teams in the NBA. So that would be awesome. That would be awesome, you know. And, of course, you got the Houston Rockets. You got Denver, who's also the top, the third best scoring team. And then you got San Antonio. And Denver, they're the hottest team in the Western Conference. They've won 12 in a row. They're tied with Miami for the best home record in the league. Both teams are 30-3. Nobody is talking about Denver. Nobody. Now I know that they're giving up 101.1 points per game, but this team can score. They got outstanding talent, and I think it's funny because I was talking about this the other day. I was like, "You think Carmelo Anthony probably wishes he was still in Denver right now? He probably does. He probably does. Mm-hmm. Right now, his former team has more wins than his current team, and his former team they're not even in first place in their division. So that's wild. That's wacky.
Oh, wow.
But you got Ty Lawson. You got Andrea Bargnani, I think that's his name. You got Wilson Chandler. And even though this guy has been on Shaq and the Food more than any other NBA player, you got to give it up for JaVale McGee. Michigan's own JaVale McGee, by the way, born and raised from Flint. He's very talented as well. So this Denver team can challenge anybody. They can challenge anybody. And I think any team that has to play them in the first round – and most likely that's going to be Memphis. If I'm Memphis, I'm worried. I'm worried. And we're going to find out how good Memphis is without Rudy Gay and now with Tayshaun Prince and Austin Day and a couple other players. We're going to find out what Memphis is really capable of in the postseason because we saw what happened last year when they lost that heartbreaking game one to the Clippers and then they ended up losing the series in seven altogether. That, some people say a series is never determined on one game. Well, in that case, yes, it is because – they were at home. They had the home court. You're at home. You're up by 27 points, and you lose.
Wow.
That's unheard of. That's something that should never, ever happen. That should never, ever happen in a playoff game, especially if you're at home. How do you do that? You know, wow. Wow. And you know what? And if you're Memphis, and if you have, and if you're in the same scenario with Denver, you better continue to keep scoring because this team will get up and down the court and they will score all over the court. They're, to me, they're the best offensive team because everyone talks about you got LeBron and Wade and Bosh or whatever, Miami. You know, those are your only three main scoring options. Denver, they play a full team offense. Everybody's going to get the ball. Everybody's going to put up points, and everybody's going to get each other involved. That's what I love about watching their offense so much. I think George Karl did an outstanding coaching job with the team. Despite no longer having Chauncey Billups or Carmelo Anthony or even Allen Iverson or Kenyon Martin or Marcus Camby or Nene, they found ways to get other guys involved with this young, talented team. And this is a team that you're really going to have to look out for in the near future. They're a team that's going to throttle a lot of teams regular season and postseason. And good luck the rest of the way to all these teams that are trying to fight for a playoff spot. Good luck because you're going to need it. You are definitely going to need it. Now,
I think the team to beat right now is going to be Miami because I see OKC. I just, you know, what was puzzling to me was for James Harden to leave OKC to go to another team like that. I mean, because they were right at the cusp of winning a championship, and it seemed like he just gave that up. If you won a championship, then the money would have come along with that.
Well, the situation with him was he wanted more money, and he felt like the contract or whatever that they offered him wasn't enough, and he felt like he kind of felt a little disrespected. But to be honest with you, he struggled in that finals. He only had one good game, and that was the game that they lost. It was a game that they lost. So the first game that they won, he struggled. And the Rockets had a game against Miami last month, and Harden, despite Houston competing, he struggled quite often. He was getting his shots blocked. He couldn't score. He struggled shooting the ball. I'm like, okay, yep, he looked no different than against Miami last year in the finals, except that he was with a different team. So I think in this case, he left because he felt like he had to. But I think that the Thunder is going to end up missing him more than he's going to miss them because despite Kevin Martin being an efficient scorer, they're going to need more out of him as they attempt to make another championship run. They're going to definitely need more out of him. They're going to need more out of Serge Ibaka and some of the other players, Kendrick Perkins. These guys are really going to have to step up. Derek Fisher, who just re-signed with the team, they're going to need more out of him. And he's, what, 40 years old, if I'm not mistaken? So they're definitely going to need more out of him. And I think in this case, it's going to be an interesting matchup to see if it comes down to those two teams in the first round. And one other quick pointer. In the Eastern Conference, pretty much all the playoff seeds are set. Nobody's going to catch Milwaukee for that eighth spot. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. A lot of people thought that the Pistons were going to do it. They're now 12 games back because, you know, they've lost 9 in a row, and they've lost 9 of their last 10 games. So it's not going to happen. The playoff run's not going to happen. They'll try again next year, but nobody's catching Milwaukee. So it pretty much looks like it's going to be Milwaukee and Miami in the first round. And those other spots, I guess it just depends, you know, between Brooklyn, Atlanta, Chicago, and Boston, it's going to come down to the wire. It's going to come down to the wire, and, you know, rightfully so. Rightfully so. So good luck to all those teams. And despite Kobe's ankle injury, I'm still having faith in my Lakers. I think we're going to get in the postseason anyway, and I think we're going to be lethal. I don't care what anyone says. You know, they're going to be lethal. It's tough to deal with. That's when you got Kobe, who's still one of the best scorers in the game to this day. So, right, like I stated earlier, we got 2 weeks left to the regular season starts in MLB, 13 days to be more exact. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what these teams are going to do, and I just want to take a quick opportunity to say good luck to all these teams. And, you know, it's going to be a long season. That's the whole crazy thing about it. It's going to be a long season. But, again, good luck to all these teams and, you know, continue to do your thing. To the NFL, where we got 37 days, 3 minutes, well, 37 days pretty much left until the 2013 NFL draft is underway. And I cannot wait to see who really is going to be the first overall pick. A lot of people thought it was going to be Geno Smith. A lot of people thought the Chiefs were going to take him. But now that they traded for Alex Smith, you have to wonder if that's going to be official now. Are they really going to still consider bringing him in? Or are they going to make another move to fill additional gaps? Or will they trade that first overall pick? You know, that's also something you have to take into consideration as well. My whole thing about it is I think that whoever they take, that first overall pick is always going to have the biggest mountain to climb because he's the number one overall pick, no matter who he is or what position he is, and that's the way it's going to be. Now, the free agency moves has just been continuous and just been absolutely crazy. I have not been able to keep up with a lot of these moves that are being made, so I'm going to try. okay. It was official. During our last broadcast, Reggie Bush flew into Detroit to visit the Lions organization the night that our show had aired, and negotiations started when our broadcast had ended. The next day, it was official. Reggie Bush signed a 4-year contract to become the Lions running back, and it looks like he's going to definitely be the starter. So that means Mikel LeSueur is going to be coming off the bench, and he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be used in short yardage situations, maybe goal line situations. Wes Welker is now a Denver Bronco. I'm happy about that, too, by the way.
That's
been the hottest thing to talk about.
because my Patriots have fallen apart.
You know, as a Broncos fan, I'm just so happy about the move because I think that you, for Peyton Manning, you can never have too many weapons for a guy like him, you know, a guy who can work
yeah.
the offense. And I think, to me, I think the Broncos are probably one player away from doing that because they didn't have that dominant wide receiver. Now they got their go-to guy. Now,
yeah.
despite that, they suffered a major setback because of the situation regarding their defensive lineman, Elvis Dumervil. Now, the situation that happened was everybody knows that the contact situation is always done by Peyton. So because of that, he did not get his contract and his paperwork handed in before the deadline. So because
oh, wow.
of that, the Broncos were forced to release him. So now he's a free agent, and the messed up part about it is he fired his agent the next day because
of
that. So now he's a free agent. Now, there's a possibility he could go back to Denver Broncos, but other teams like the Ravens are interested in him, the Falcons are interested in him, Detroit may also be interested in him because they can certainly use a pass rusher on the end, the pass rusher to come off the outside. So I'm not going to say that it's automatic that he will be back in Denver. I do think that despite that loss, I still think that the Broncos are in good shape to go on to a Super Bowl and win it because, you know, Elvis Dumervil was a guy that just, you know, a lot of people thought that he was just going to be every once in a while situational type player. He wasn't going to be a top-notch defensive lineman. But despite that, I think that in this case, they still have pieces to win. They also brought in Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie to help out their secondary. So that's also going to be a big plus for them. Also, we've also had Deshaun Goldson leave the San Francisco 49ers and sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That deal was a 5-year contract, and he's going to get paid a lot of money, a whole lot of money. Also, we had like I said, Ryan Fitzpatrick was cut by the Buffalo Bills. We also had another move where the Colts had brought in Matt Hasselbeck to be their backup quarterback. It looks like Drew Stanton is going to be with the Arizona Cardinals, who also signed Rashard Mendenhall. The NFC West, to me, they've done the most work as far as bringing in free agents because we all know that the 49ers, they brought in Anquan Boldin. The Seahawks, they brought in Percy Harvin. That trade did happen. It did go down last week. They also signed Cliff Avril. Good for them. Also, the Rams, they brought in Jake Long to help out their offensive line. I think that's a good move for them. And, of course, the Cardinals, they brought in Mendenhall. So the NFC West overall has been stacking. Now, in the NFC North, everyone knows about the Lions bringing in Reggie Bush and Jason Jones, a defensive tackle from Seattle, who's also born and raised in Michigan, by the way. They also re-signed Chris Houston. They brought back Louis Delmas for a 2-year contract. Also restructured the contracts with Ndamukong Suh and Nate Burleson. They're still trying to work out their contract negotiation where they can restructure Matthew Stafford's deal because as of right now, he will be a free agent after next season. So will Ndamukong Suh, by the way. So it's good to see them restructure their contracts and, you know, save the team a lot of cap space. And, of course, the other big move out of the NFC North is Greg Jennings going to the Minnesota Vikings. Now he's going to get the Brett Favre treatment. What's funny is there were rumors that were speculating that he was going to either sign with the 49ers or, you know, probably go back to Green Bay because you know how some players, they get released by a team and then they end up re-signing with that team for lesser money. In this particular case, I'm kind of shocked because I don't even know who the Vikings quarterback is going to be next season. I'm not automatic that it's going to be Christian Ponder. Now, they still got Joe Webb. They just signed Matt Castle from Kansas City who was cut. So, to me, as far as I'm concerned, that's going to be an open race for the starting quarterback position. I mean, who says that that Ponder is going to be the starter? I mean, who really believes that, you know?
Did they lose confidence in Ponder?
I think so a little bit. I think most people look at that offense where it's more of Adrian Peterson than anybody else. And, you know, that being said, now that they do have Jennings, they do have a go-to guy, you got to figure out who's the quarterback that's going to get him the ball. And only the preseason and training camp is really going to determine that. Who's going to stay healthy? Who's going to be the most productive in the preseason? You know, who's not going to make the most mistakes? Or who's going to make the less mistakes for that matter? A lot of those questions to me are going to be answered. By the time the regular season opener starts, we will know for sure who the Vikings starting quarterback is. Like I said, it's just been so many moves that have been made. And like I said, it's just been so hard to keep up with a lot of these teams. Darrell Revis is still a Jet for the time being. There's talks about trying to for certain teams to reach out to make a trade for him right now. The 49ers have been the front runner. It remains to be seen if a deal is going to be done. We don't know how that situation is going to work out. Also, Mike Wallace signed a 5-year deal with the Miami Dolphins last week. So that was official. And I knew he was going to be gone because when I look at him and Wes Welker last year, they both signed contracts with their teams at the last minute. So my whole thing was, well, you know what? After the season's over and when the free agency period begins, they're going to be gone, both of them. And it didn't surprise me up to this point because apparently the Steelers, they feel confident that they can win games without him. They parted ways with Rashard Mendenhall. I actually thought that was a good move because I don't think that Mendenhall is that good of a running back, to be honest with you. I think that in this case, the Steelers, they feel like they're going to go in a different direction. They also cut James Harrison, by the way, who looks like he's going to be looking for a new home. So the Pittsburgh team right now, they're looking to get a little younger now because they got so many veteran players on their team, and most of their veterans have been battling injury issues for so many years now. And it's time that, you know, it's time for a change of scenery for some of these guys. And I also think that they also brought back Plaxico Burress, which is a good signing for them. He always was their favorite target, even in his heyday before he went to the Giants. I think in this case, you also have to take consideration with the Miami Dolphins. They've stacked up a little bit. They brought in Anthony Fasano. They brought in Ellerby from the Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens, boy, have they been losing so many players. Okay, they lost Ray Lewis to retirement. They traded Anquan Boldin. They lost Ellerby to Miami. They lost defensive lineman Paul Kruger to Cleveland. They're on the verge of losing Aird Reed. They are just, wow. And also their center, Matt Burke, has also retired as well. So this team is going to take a big hit as far as their roster is concerned. And I don't think that Aird Reed will be back. I thought for sure Aird Reed was going to sign with the Texans because he visited the team this past weekend. No deal, at least not now anyway, but still keep your eyes open for that. It looks like the Texans are going to bring in Chad Johnson, and I think that's going to be an interesting move because Chad Johnson has had failure stints in New England and Miami. And as far as the statistical performance is concerned. But I think in this particular case, it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do. It's going to be really interesting to see what they're going to do. And it's just been so, so.
When you say Chad Johnson, you mean Ocho Cinco?
That would be him. Rumors have been speculating.
I thought he was done.
Well, it looks like he's going to get one more shot.
Wow.
Just to run a quick rundown of some of these teams and the free agency period. I'll actually start with the Texans, okay? They have not brought in anybody yet. However, they have lost some of their players. Glover Quinn, the safety, he moved on to Detroit. He was the other big signing for the Lions. Kevin Walter, the wide receiver, he's cut. James Casey, their fullback, who's now with Philadelphia. Justin Forsett, he's now with Jacksonville. Their running back, their safety, Alan Ball, he's also now with Jacksonville. And they still got some unrestricted free agents that they got to re-sign. Quentin Demps, Sean Cody, Ryan Harris, Brady James, Bryce McCain, Jesse Nading, Stanford Rout. They still got to bring back some guys. the Steelers, like I was just saying, the Steelers, they brought in tight end Matt Spaeth from Chicago, Bruce Gradkowski, a quarterback who spent his early years with Tampa Bay, spent some time in Oakland, just recently in Cincinnati. William Gay, a cornerback from Arizona, also another key arrival. But they lost, like I said, they lost Mendenhall, they lost Harrison, he's gone. Keenan Lewis, their quarterback, who's now with the Saints. They did bring back Larry Foote. They brought back Plaxico Burress. So, I mean, they still got some pieces that they got to work on. Now, with the Ravens taking a big hit, okay, these are the players that they have lost. They lost quarterback Kerry Williams, who's now with Philadelphia. They lost Bernard Pollard, who's a strong safety, and I think he's still available as a free agent too. Danelle Ellerby signed with Miami. Paul Kruger signed with Cleveland. They lost a lot of linebackers, three of them to be exact. And, of course, they traded Anquan Boldin to San Francisco. These are the players. They only were able to re-sign four players, really. Besides Flacco, they signed Morgan Cox, offensive lineman, to a two-year contract. David Reed, wide receiver, two-year contract. And another strong and the safety, James Hedigo. I don't even know if I pronounced his last name right, but he's a safety, and they brought him back as well. But they also brought in Marcus Spears from the Cowboys and defensive tackle Chris Canty. So their defense is, I guess, you know, their defense just got a little bit of an upgrade. But the fact that they lost those other players is going to hurt them. But Marcus Spears and Chris Canty will help. They will definitely help, especially that pass rush. They will definitely help that defensive line. So that defensive line just got to upgrade. But their linebacking core is definitely going to take a hit, and their secondary is definitely going to take a hit. Your Patriots team, I should say, well, let's see. They brought in Danny Amendola. They brought him in, you know, as a replacement for Welker. Donald Jones, a wide receiver from Buffalo. Kick returner Leon Washington, who was cut by Seattle. They brought him in. That'll help out their special teams a little bit. Adrian Wilson, who to me has been one of the best safeties nobody ever talked about. He played with Arizona. He was on that Cardinals Super Bowl team that went to the Super Bowl. That's going to help. That's going to help a little bit. You know, the Patriots, they are always willing to bring in veteran players, you know, for leadership and for contributions and things like that. Sit-Tech, their offensive lineman, they brought him in from Atlanta. Jason Vega, who came from the Canadian League, they brought him in, a defensive lineman. And that Amendola contract is 5 years, $31 million with $10 million guaranteed. Now, they also lost some key players as well. Of course, they lost Welker, Brandon Lloyd, who's been cut, Danny Woodhead, who was also cut, but he signed with the San Diego Chargers. Patrick Chung, their safety, he's now with Philadelphia. Donald Thomas, an offensive lineman, who also signed, who signed with Indianapolis. And because of that, they were only able to bring back two players, cornerbacks, by the way. Cornerbacks, Aquid Talib and Kyle Arrington. Yeah, you guys are going to be in some trouble next year. You guys are going to be a little bit in trouble. Just trust me, losing Wes Welker is really going to hurt. Losing Welker is really, really going to hurt. No disrespect to Amendola. He was a solid wide receiver in St. Louis, and he's definitely going to be better in New England with the system that they run. But you're talking about losing your go-to guy. And your two tight ends have also been banged up the past couple years. So what's going to happen if these guys suffer another injury? To me, you know, your team is going to be in trouble. Like I said, Welker was the guy. You know, Welker was the guy. Despite dropping some key passes in crucial games, he was the guy. I think they could have found a way to work it out, but the whole situation does not surprise me because, again, last year his contract was at the last minute. And I knew, I'm like, okay, well, he only signed a one-year deal, and it took them forever to get that one-year deal done. He is not coming back next year. I knew it.
Tom Brady had just restructured his contract, you know, and for them to lose Welker like that, that's very disappointing. you know, very disappointing.
The crazy thing is that Tom Brady was reportedly furious. Like, he was really, really furious that this move had went down. But, you know, this goes back to the Patriots organization.
He's not the only one.
This goes back to the Patriots organization. This is a team that they are willing to part ways with key players. It started with Drew Bledsoe when Tom Brady first took over as a quarterback. Willie McGinnis, they let him go to Cleveland. Richard Seymour, they traded him to Oakland. Lawyer Malloy, everyone remembers him. You know, when he got cut, he signed with Buffalo in that first game. They beat the Patriots 31-0. But then the Pats got the last laugh because that game took place in the season opener. And then the second matchup took place in the final regular season game, and the Patriots won 31-0. And they ended up hosting the Lombardi Trophy when it was all said and done. So they are willing to part ways with players. They traded Randy Moss. I mean, that tells you something right there. And, you know, that's just what the Patriots organization does. Now, Wes Welker's agent had some bad choice of words to describe Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots. And, you know, he's a guy that just makes, you know, rash decisions, whether to bring back players or whether not to bring back players. They're always going to be cutting guys, and unfortunately that's just something that they did in this particular case. Speaking of the Broncos, let me run down what my second favorite team has done. Key arrivals, okay, they brought Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Terrence Knighton, defensive tackle from Jacksonville, Wes Welker, of course, Stuart Bradley, another a linebacker from Arizona, Luis Vasquez, an offensive lineman from San Diego, which is going to help out their offensive line protection, honestly. They brought back Kevin Vickerson, re-signed defense tackle. David Bruton, safety, they also brought him back. They did lose Elvis Dumervil, but it's a possibility he could be back. Jason Hunter, another defensive end, he signed with Oakland. DJ Williams, their linebacker, they cut him. And they also cut one of their backup quarterbacks, Caleb Haney. They still got some other players to re-sign. Brandon Stokley, Ty Warren, Tracy Porter, Keith Brooking, who's been playing for so many years, Dan Coppin, Justin Bannon, Jim Leonard, and wide receiver Matt Willis. So it's still up in the air as to what they're going to do with some of these players. As far as and these were the AFC moves, by the way. These were the AFC free agency moves. And, you know, it's good for some of these teams to really bulk up because, like I said, so many moves were happening between last week's broadcast all the way up until right now, and more moves will be continuing. And then the draft itself is really going to determine a whole lot. It's really going to determine a whole lot. For all you Lions fans out there, you know, let's do a quick rundown of what they have done. Basically, they re-signed. These are the players that they re-signed. Ashley Palmer for 2 years, linebacker. Safety Don Carey for 1 year. Safety Louis Delmas for 2 years. Dylan Gandy, a guard and center. Terms have been yet unknown. Corey Hillard, a tackle for 2 years. Chris Houston, 5 years, $25 million. Linebacker DeAndre Levy. 3 years, $9.75 million. Their long snapper, Don Molbat, for 1 more year. Wide receiver, Kasim Osgood, for 1 year, $700,000 contract. And safety, Amari Spivey. He's not tendered as a restricted free agent, but it was a 1 year contract with terms unknown. The players acquired. Let me go to the players who were lost. Okay, they lost Cliff Avril to Seattle. Jeff Backus is now retired. I think a lot of people are happy about that. Gaston Cherylis, he's now with Indianapolis.
Yay!
Drayton Florence, he's now with Carolina. Good riddance. Sammy Lee Hill, he's now with Tennessee. And Stephen Peterman, Kyle Vannebosch, and Titus Young are now cut, and those three players have yet to find teams. The players that they acquired, Reggie Bush from Miami, $16 million for 4 years. Dominique Curry, a wide receiver, turns have been unknown. A cornerback, DJ Johnson from Washington, turns are also unknown. Jason Jones, Michigan's own Jason Jones from Seattle, 3 years, $9.5 million. Wide receiver Lance Long, terms have been unknown. Safety Glover Quinn from Houston, $23.5 million for the next 5 years. And wide receiver Devin Thomas, who's a free agent, terms have been unknown. So those are the players that they brought back. They also still have they also brought back Willie Young. I think they brought back Jason Fox as well. Exclusive right free agents, safety Ricardo Silva, he's most likely to be back. Joyke Bell, he's most likely to be back, the running back. He better. They better bring him back. Seriously.
Right.
Wide receiver Chris Durham will be brought to camp, but he'll be a long shot to make the team. He had a couple of good moments last year, and, you know, he's 6'6", so they like his size. But despite being that tall, he hasn't shown much toughness or resolve to get balls in crowded areas, especially around the goal line. So he'll be brought to camp. They'll try him out, and they'll see what happens with him. These are some of their unrestricted free agents. Justin Durant most likely will be moving on to another team. Now that they brought back DeAndre Levy, they did reach out to Durant a little bit, but it doesn't look like he's going to be back as well. He just hasn't been a good fit in this system, and he's one of those linebackers that hasn't made a lot of impact plays. It's not just making tackles. It's about forcing fumbles, getting sacks, and getting interceptions. That's not enough.
Right.
Andre Flewellen, the defensive tackle, he looks like he could be back. He knows the system, and he has proven to be reliable. Jason Hanson looks like he's going to be at least back for one more season, so it looks like they're most likely going to re-sign him. Their punter,
that's
Nick
good.
Harris, he definitely will not be back. His 41.5-yard average ranked dead last in the league last year, and his 37.6 net yardage was ranked 26. So it's time for him to move on. Running back James Harrison is out of football right now. He's still recovering from a brain tumor that was detected by the Eagles 2 years ago when the Lions attempted to trade him. This was at the time when they were trying to get Ronnie Brown. They were trying to trade him, and this was right around the time where Javon Best suffered that concussion, and they were looking for another running back to fill up the depth chart. So they traded Harrison because they felt like Brown would be better. And when he went to take his physical, that was when it was discovered that he had a brain tumor. So, so unfortunately, the deal didn't work out, but at least he's okay now, and that's the most important thing.
Right.
Tight end Will Heller just completed his 10th NFL season. He's been quite efficient, lined up as an H-back, a blocking tight end, a starting tight end like he did the last three games to end the season. He's valuable, but the only question is whether he wants to come back for another year because he has played a long time, and 10 years is a long time for a tight end. Defensive end Lawrence Jackson, he hasn't always seen eye-to-eye with defensive coordinator Guthrie Cunningham, but he has been a consistent performer in a reserve role. But he's one of those, you know, cerebral guys who analyzes things and asks a lot of questions. And, you know, Cunningham would just prefer he just line up and attack the quarterback. So you can expect the Lions to push to re-sign him. He's also Ndamukong Suh's closest friend on the team, and that's more important than most of us might think.
Right.
Cornerback Jacob Lacy could be brought back, but only to play nickel coverage. Because of injuries, he was forced to play on the outside last year, and it didn't go well. So it's not a high priority for the team. The other cornerback, Pat Lee, he won't be back. He never really won a spot in the secondary, and there were times when most of us didn't even know he was on the roster. The only player after injuries depleted the players in front of him, and he didn't contribute much on special teams, which is his main specialty, by the way. Kick returner, well, return man, Stephon Logan, to me, I hope they don't bring him back. 2010,
yes.
He had a good year. He had a good year. But since then, he's fumbled. He's muffed punt return coverages. To me, they can move on from him. Hell, I would put Reggie Bush back there as a return man, to be honest with you. Get rid of Logan.
I would put me back there.
And you might be better. You might be better. There is talk that they could put Joyke Bell. He's going to be the front runner to try out to receive kick returns and punt returns. So that's also going to be interesting to see. Kevin Smith, unfortunately, won't be brought back. Now that they brought in Reggie Bush, they're definitely going to draft another running back late in the draft to supplement LeSure and Bell. And they're also high on a young practice squad prospect, Devin Moore. Kevin Smith, to me, since he started suffering injuries when they were 0-16, he bounced in and out of the organization. It's unfortunate because he came back 2 years ago, had a very good game against Carolina. His best game I've ever seen him play, and unfortunately, it hasn't worked out, and they decided to move on and go in a different direction. But when I thought about his personal situation off the field, I thought it was a good story. But, you know, sometimes people need to realize it's a business, and sometimes that sort of thing happens, and you just got to move on with your roster. But so far, those have been a lot of moves that a lot of these teams have made, and there will be more definitely as the season as the offseason continues, and then the draft itself is definitely going to determine a lot. So we got 37 days left. We got a little bit over a month away, so get ready, folks. The draft is going to determine a whole lot. We're about to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about March Madness. March freaking madness. Get ready to get off. It's going to be on and popping, and I can't wait. We're going to talk about that. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We apologize for a few technical difficulties. I would like to say real quickly, thank you guys for still continuing to tune in and supporting our show. Thank you for your contributions to everyone on Facebook. I thank you guys so much. We have 30 minutes left in our broadcast, and this is time for March Madness. Now, when most people, a lot of people usually during this time of year are always so excited to talk about, you know, March Madness and getting ready for the tournaments to start and, you know, filling out the brackets, which is always going to be a tough one. The thing that I enjoy the most is it's just watching some of these teams really, really go at it, like really, really go at it and really, really, really start to buckle down. Now, what makes everything so grand scale is, you know, you got tonight, you got the NIT rounds that are happening. And we actually have two games that are in progress. Actually, one game's in progress, another game is going to be starting. Right now, NC8&T is leading Liberty 67-61. And tonight, St. Mary's will be going up against Mid-Tennessee State. So that game will be taking place at 9 p.m., 9:10 Eastern to be more exact. And if you have ESPN, you can also tune in to some of the games that are currently in progress as well. It's just that time of the year now to really, really, really be excited. And if you did get your brackets filled out, I want to say good luck to you because something tells me you are definitely going to need it. Definitely. It's almost fathomable, really. The main tournament will be kicking off 2 days from tonight. And right now I'm looking at the West Division, and you got basically these are the matches. I'm just going to run down the matches real quickly. Number one, Gonzaga, going up against number one Gonzaga going up against number 16 Southern. Number two Ohio State against 15 Iona, or I think that's the school. Number eight Pittsburgh against number nine Wichita State. Number five Wisconsin against number 12 Mississippi. Number four Kansas State against number 13 Boise / LaSalle. Number six Arizona against number 11 Belmont. Number three, New Mexico versus number 14, Harvard. And number seven, Notre Dame against number 10, Iowa State. Now, in the East region, you got number one, Indiana against number 16, LIUBR / JMU. Number eight, NC State against number nine, Temple. Number five, UNLV against number 12, California. Number four, Syracuse against number 13, Montana. Number six, Butler against number 11, Bucknell. Number three, Marquette against number 14, Davidson. Number 11, Illinois against number 10, Colorado. And number two, Miami, Florida against number 15, Pacific. In the South region, you got number one, Kansas against number 16, West Kentucky. Number eight, North Carolina against number nine, Villanova. Number five, VCU against number 12, Akron. Number four, Michigan against number 13, South Dakota State. Number six, UCLA against number 11, Minnesota. Number three, Florida against number 14, Northwestern State. Number seven, San Diego State against number 10, Oklahoma. And number two, Georgetown against number 15, Florida Gulf Coast. And finally, in the Midwest Division, you got number one, Louisville against number 16, NCAT Liberty. Number eight, Colorado State against number nine, Missouri. Number five, Oklahoma State against number 12, Oregon. Number four, St. Louis against number 13, North Mexico State. Sorry. Number six, Memphis against number 11, NTSU / SNC. Number three, Michigan State against number 14, Valparaiso. Number seven, Creighton against number 10, Cincinnati. And number two, finally, number two, Duke against number 15, Albany. I cannot begin to tell you who is most likely going to be upset. to be honest with you. I would say this. Out of all the number one seeded teams, I think the one team that's most likely to possibly be upset to me, I like West Kentucky against Kansas. I think that's an upset that could definitely happen as far as the number one seed. Only one time in the history of March Madness has all four seeds went on to start taking the Final Four. As far as, well, being Michiganders, as far as the Michigan teams are concerned, Michigan State against Valparaiso, that's definitely going to be an interesting matchup. Of course, I'm going to take Michigan State, obviously, because I think they have a shot to pull it off. Michigan against South Dakota State, that's going to be an interesting matchup, but I also think Michigan is going to take it. I think as far as upsets are concerned, I think number 9 Villanova against number 8 North Carolina, that's definitely a shot to be an upset. You also have to say Iowa State against number 10 Iowa State against number 7 Notre Dame. That's an upset. That's a strong possibility. Number 12
right.
Mississippi against number 5 Wisconsin. That's that's also upset alert. And of course you got number 14 Davidson against number 3 Marquette. Upset alert. Number 13 Montana against number 4 Syracuse. Upset alert. Number 12, California against number 5, UNLV, upset alert. So the point that I'm trying to make here is, please, if you're going to fill out your bracket, don't just put the higher seeded teams up. You understand what I'm saying? Do it because you are confident that this team is going to win. Don't just do it because of the seed. Look at the roster, look at the players, look at the coaching, because that's what it's going to come down to. Okay, real quickly, we got a caller, 313. Go ahead, speak your mind. We're talking March Madness right now. I hope you got your bracket filled out. Caller, you are on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Hope we did not lose him. Caller, you're still on the air. Looks like we're having more technical difficulties. My apologies to everyone out there. Well, until our caller comes through, I just want to say real quickly, well, have you gotten your bracket filled out so far, Lisa?
Yes, actually, I did it, I think, a couple of nights ago because I wanted to make sure that I don't wait till the last minute. So I hustled and got mine together. I think I can't see Gonzaga making it to the Final Four. Number one, Gonzaga.
You're not sold on Gonzaga?
No. Mm-mm.
You know, I don't blame you one bit. I don't blame you. I really don't blame you. I look at it like, well, you know what? Number one seeds always have the most pressure on them. And sometimes when you have the most pressure, you tend to lose a little focus on playing. And that other team that you're facing against usually will sneak up on you, definitely sneak
right.
up on you.
Especially if you haven't been there before.
That is true. That is true. Now, who do you have in your Final Four?
I think I have Louisville, number one. Believe it or not, I have Indiana. And I have, you know, I was kind of torn. I don't know. I think, Ohio State. Let's see, Indiana, Ohio State. And part of me think, just for the heck of it, I did put Kansas, but I'm, you know, I might end up changing it. And see, and that's a kiss of death because usually when I start rearranging things after I pick my teams, I usually mess up when I start changing some things.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely don't see Gonzaga making it all the way to the Final Four, even, you know, I'd be shocked to make it to the Final 16, actually.
the teams that I have in the Final Four, I'm going to be a little biased. as far as the West is concerned, I have, believe it or not, you might think this is crazy, but I think that the West region is definitely going to be up for grabs because I'm not really sold on Ohio State. I'm not sold on Gonzaga. I'm gonna pull for Wisconsin. I'm gonna pull for Wisconsin. They're the fifth seed. I'm gonna pull them to come out of the West.
They're a good team.
Yes, definitely, definitely. In the East region, I got Miami, Florida. I got Miami, Florida coming out. In the South, of course, I want to root for Michigan. I'm gonna definitely be supporting them, but I don't think that they have what it takes. I'm actually going to take Georgetown. I'm going to take Georgetown to come out of the South. And unless something changes, I'm going to definitely stick with them. And I'm going to be biased, and I'm going to take Michigan State to come out of the Midwest because I think Michigan State can beat Duke. If it comes down to Duke, I think they can beat Louisville if it comes down to it. So, yeah, those are my Final Four teams, folks. A lot of people are going to think that I'm crazy for taking Wisconsin to come out of those places. But it's the truth. It's the truth. See, I learned a long time ago you should never, don't always pick, you know, top three seed teams to come out.
Right.
Because there's going to be a Cinderella story. My brackets used to look so disoriented because I always used to take, you know, top three seeds or top five seeds. Or if Michigan State was out of the top five, I always picked them. But I'm always going to pick Michigan to go in the Final Four as long as Tom Izzo is their head coach, period.
Yeah, I
agree. I'm never going to give up on it.
Because I rolled Michigan State one time when I filled out a bracket, and they helped propel me in my league. I kept riding Michigan State. Michigan, I'm a little scared of because, to me, they're still young. And you know, they started off strong in the season, but here of late they've been just kind of faltering.
Yeah, kind of up and down. And losing that game to Penn State really, really hurt them. A lot of people don't realize that they had a 15-point lead in that game, and they blew it. And that kind of stung because that kind of took them a little bit out of position to compete for the Big Ten title, although they still had the tournament. But it also affects your seeds, affects your wins and losses, you know, that sort of thing. And the sad part is that it was just so messed up how the whole thing had came down to what it came down to. And if you look at it from one angle, most of these teams, and I look at it like with Michigan, I didn't think that they would be this good this year. I thought that they was like another year away from like really, really making some noise. But then they just came out of nowhere and then started really, really, you know, jumping the gun. And I felt like, well, you know what? This team is going to do some things. They're definitely going to do some things. So I kind of stung with them. But, of course, you know, I'm going with State because that's the team I cheer for the most in the NCAA basketball anyway. And
well,
I felt that in this case, I thought that they were really, really going to do it. I really felt like they were going to do it. And at the same time, I felt like, well, in this case, they certainly had a shot to do some things, and they certainly were a team that it looked like that they were going to, you know, pull off a few upsets here and there and, you know, surprise a few teams or whatever. But they have done they played more impressive than I could have anticipated, and I'm happy for that. I'm very happy for
that.
I think they're in a tough spot right now.
Right,
I really do.
Agree.
I think they're in a tough spot. Even if they do get past South Dakota State, they're going to have to play VCU or Akron. That's going to be a tough matchup because VCU is definitely a tough team. And then if they get past them, you got to go up against possibly North Carolina in the regional semifinals or Kansas. Or even Western Kentucky or maybe even Villanova. So it's going to be tough. It's definitely going to be tough. But I will say to all these teams that are trying to, you know, really, really make a name for themselves, I just say, well, you know what? Play to your higher standard. You know, play the best that you can play and just don't even think about it. Don't even think about it. Don't think about the possibility that you got to play this next team or whatever. Play because you want to win. And you have the desire within you to showcase your skills. And it also is going to come down to coaching a little bit, too. So when we got guys like Tom Izzo, Roy Williams, Rick Pitino, maybe even John Calipari, you can't count out the great coaching. So I always say, well, play the best that you can play and try and live up to higher standards.
Right. You think Michigan tends to rely too much on the jump shot?
I think so. I think some teams live and die by the jump shooting. I look at it like, always, if you got guys that can attack the basket, do that. Because you're going to be able to create your shots. You're going to get a foul shooting opportunity because they always do the ruling differently in NCAA. I just look at it like, well, you know what? Don't be afraid and don't always count on jump shooting all game. You know, go out there, attack the basket, especially if you got a bigger lineup. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because Michigan is my favorite team, but I think, you know, they need to be a little bit, maybe another year, be seasoned. And I love Michigan, but I just don't see them going very far in the tournament. I see Michigan State faring a lot better. I actually have them going further in the tournament because I'm really fond of Adrian Payne. I like his play, you know, and I think his surrounding cast, I think they'll be able to go very far in the tournament. And plus, you know, you got a great coach in Tom Izzo.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that's what it's going to come down to. I also think that any team that's, because, you know, some of these players, they look forward to getting drafted in the NBA, so they tend to get a little distracted. You know, they think about money and fame and glory and things like that, and they tend to lose a little sight and focus on the main primary objective, which is what they're currently doing and what they're supposed to be doing right at that precise moment. So you got to look at so many different outlooks. So many different outlooks. I mean, I just look at it like, you know, March Madness itself is just such a great timing. You know, for college basketball, it's so exciting and everything. I remember Kobe Bryant once stated in an interview that he wished he could have gone to college because of March Madness and just seeing the passion from some of these teams and these players. And I think, to me, March Madness might be the most passionate sports tournament, because these young players, they play to win. You know, they just do it and they just play absolutely, you know, to higher standards. And, you know, you certainly have to love it. And, you know, you certainly got to, you know, play up to higher standards. When you think about, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, who have, you know, some of these Cinderella stories, I should say real quick, I think about going back to college basketball, some of these Cinderella stories. I look at George Mason University, and in 2006, I look at him because that team that year pulled out some major upsets, and it was crazy because it started with beating North Carolina Wilmington, but they were ranked higher.
Mm-hmm.
They were ranked higher. But I also think that they did some things where they were like the first mid-major team in over a quarter century to advance to the Final Four. They ended up losing to the eventual champion Florida Gators, though. But they were quite a story that year. They really were. They were quite a story, and I just look at what they did as far as you know, just going all the way. Although that was the year that a lot of people picked Florida to go all the way and win and, you know, and just, you know, do it up or whatever. Actually, that year, I got them confused with George Washington. Okay. It started with beating Michigan State. They beat Michigan State, who's ranked number 6 in the Washington D.C. regional. Then they beat North Carolina, who was ranked number 3. Then they beat Wichita State, who was ranked number 7. And their biggest upset by far was beating UConn, who was ranked number 1. And they went to the Final Four along with Florida, who won it, UCLA, and then LSU. It was just wild. It was just wild to see that. Just unfreaking believable. but they were quite a story that year. They were quite a story that year. And then 2 years ago, Virginia, Commonwealth University. A lot of people, including Dick Vitale and Jay Billis, they were surprised that VCU was given a berth in the NCAA tournament as a number 11 seed over other teams that were more deserving, you know, of that position. They upset 5 teams from 5 different power conferences that year. USC, Georgetown, who was number 6, Purdue, who was number 3, Florida State, who was number 10, and then beating number 1 seeded Kansas in the Elite 8. Just absolutely wild and ridiculous. You know, just to throw in some of the Cinderella stories, you know, a lot of these teams, there's going to be a lot of expectations right now. And nowadays, you often wonder who's going to be the team that's going to do it, you know. And it's just such a thing as home court advantage. Well, it depends on where you play. When Michigan State competed in 2008, they competed at Ford Field. And, of course, you know, they had the fans way behind them. Even when they played North Carolina in the championship, they had the fans behind them. But North Carolina was just so dominant that year. That was when they had Tyler Hansbrough and Ty Lawson, some of the other key players. It was a great matchup. But in the end, it didn't turn out to be such a great matchup for MSU because they lost. But playing at Ford Field, when you had Magic Johnson, you know, guys like him in attendance, you know, his alma mater, it just wasn't enough. But Carolina was just such a dominant team that year. And, you know, they proved it by winning and going all the way. And then eventually some of their players got drafted, and it was time to move on. But I will say to all your teams this year, good luck. If you're representing a university or a college, you know, any of these teams that's performing in this tournament, good luck to you. Stay with your team no matter who they're facing because you never know. Somebody could pull off a major upset, and it could happen more than once. The point that I'm trying to make is your team will play to its higher standards, most likely. You never know who's going to pull off an upset. You don't know who's going to be this year's Cinderella story. You don't know who's going to be that powerhouse team. Just go out there and play. Don't think about it. Just play. Just play. And as we come to the end of our broadcast, I just want to say, again, good luck to all your teams. Good luck to you too, Lisa, because, you know, you might need some of that on your side, you know, because you never know who's going to go all the way.
I can say is David had his Goliath, and so little David brought down Goliath, so that's what you got to keep in mind.
Well, you know, also when you think about major upsets, you know, you think about those teams that weren't supposed to be in that position. You know, the 1968 Jets, when they went all the way to beat the Colts, the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl III, they were coming out of the AFL that time, and AFL was considered the lesser organization to the NFL, and they were feuding. And then when the Jets finally won, that's when the Jets won that Super Bowl, that's when the NFL really, really started to show more respect to the AFL. And eventually both leagues merged to become the ultimate NFL. We don't know. You know, when it comes to upsets, you never know who's going to pull one off. And I guarantee you these next couple days, going all the way to this weekend, is going to determine a lot. All the games are going to be broadcast on many different stations. Some games are going to be broadcasted on CBS. Other games are going to be broadcasted on TNT. Other games are going to be broadcasted possibly on, you know, your local, definitely ESPN, your ESPN station. So if you have access to those stations, tune in. Definitely tune in. And also one quick note, the last undefeated team who went all the way was 1991 with UNLV. They were 30 and 0, but they lost in the national semifinal game to Duke, unfortunately. But they were 30 and 0. They had a great start, and this year's games will be taking place in Atlanta, Georgia. This year's major games are going to be taking place. The host cities are going to be taking place in Atlanta. So good luck to all your teams. This is the end of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. I want to thank my lovely co-host, Lisa Morris, for her contributions. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Again, good luck to all your teams. You're definitely going to need it. In the meantime, you can check out some of the NIT games that are taking place as we speak right now. We got NBA games in progress. We got NHL games in progress. And 2 weeks left, less than 2 weeks left into the MLB season. Be on the lookout for continuous moves in the NFL free agency period. So, again, congratulations. And one quick note to pass along, Jaguars center Brad Meester is now re-signed with the team. It'll be his 14th season with the team. And Titans wide receiver Kenny Britt has been found not guilty of his DUI charges, thankfully for them. Mm-hmm. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We will see you guys next time. Take care of yourself.
Good night.